ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Sometimes, to mitigate distresses in the forest of the material world, the conditioned soul receives cheap blessings from atheists. He then loses all intelligence in their association. This is exactly like jumping into a shallow river. As a result, one simply breaks his head. He is not able to mitigate his sufferings from the heat, and in both ways he suffers. The misguided, conditioned soul also approaches so-called sadhus and swamis who preach against the principles of the Vedas. He does not receive benefit from them, either in the present or in the future. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Cheaters are always there to manufacture their own way of spiritual realization. To get some material benefit, the conditioned soul approaches these pseudo-sannyasis and yogis for cheap blessings. But he does not receive any benefit from them, either spiritual or material. In this age, there are many cheaters who show some jugglery and magic. They even create gold to amaze their followers, and their followers accept them as God. This type of cheating is very prominent in Kali Yuga. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the real guru in this way. Samsara dava nalalida loka tranaya karunya gana ganakvam praptasya kalyana gunanavasya vande guru sri charanaravindam. One should approach a guru who can extinguish the blazing fire of this material world, the struggle for existence. People want to be cheated, and therefore they go to yogis and swamis who play tricks. But tricks do not mitigate the miseries of material life. If being able to manufacture gold is a criterion for becoming God, then why not accept Krishna, the proprietor of the entire universe, wherein there are countless tons of gold? As mentioned before, the color gold is compared to the will-o'-the-wisp, or yellow stool. Therefore, one should not be allured by gold-manufacturing gurus, but should sincerely approach a devotee like Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat instructed Rahugana Maharaj so well that the king was relieved from the bodily conception. One cannot become happy by accepting a false guru. A guru should be accepted as advised in Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sreya uttamam. One should approach a bona fide guru to inquire about the highest benefit of life. Such a guru is described as follows. Shabde parecha nishnatam. Such a guru does not manufacture gold or juggle words. He is well versed in the conclusions of Vedic knowledge. Vedaishta sarveraham eva vedya. He is freed from all material contamination and is fully engaged in Krishna's service. If one is able to obtain the dust of the lotus feet of such a guru, his life becomes successful. Otherwise, he is baffled both in this life and in the next. sometimes to mitigate distresses in the forest of the material world, the conditioned soul receives cheap blessings from atheists. He then loses all intelligence in their association. This is exactly like jumping in a shallow river. As a result, one simply breaks his head. He is not able to mitigate his sufferings from the heat, and in both ways he suffers. The misguided conditioned soul also approaches so-called sadhus and swamis who preach against the principle of the Vedas. He does not receive benefit from them, either in the present or in the future. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 4, Chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment, Text Number 13. The conditioned soul, suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence, is looking for shelter. Shukadeva Goswami is herein warning that as in the desert there is a phenomena called the mirage, we should not be fooled by it. The mirage appears to be fresh, sparkling water. It appears in that way to our eyes, to our mind. Our heart is so excited and enthusiastic to be relieved. In the desert, because you're starving of thirst, you want to believe. Hope against hope, that desire even clouds your ability to discriminate whether it was really water or not. Similarly, in this world, because we want relief from suffering, we want pleasure so bad that when Maya Devi creates a mirage, an illusory opportunity, even if we have heard the scriptures, we do not want to believe it. We just do not want to believe it because we're so thirsty. But in the end, because of this ignorance, instead of quenching one's thirst after eating hot, dry sand, it increases the suffering of our hunger and thirst. In a similar way, if we're burning hot, we see a river. Oh, the river looks so promising. That the conditioned soul wants to refresh him or herself by plunging one's entire body in the cool, refreshing waters of that river to find relief. But so enthusiastic to jump in that river does not discriminate with good intelligence to see how deep the river really is. It appears very deep. Actually, I know several people who jumped in lakes and rivers and broke bones because they were so enthusiastic to enjoy the water, they just didn't think in terms of whether it's deep enough. So yes, we're burning hot. We need relief. We cannot tolerate the pain, scorching heat, And there's a river that looks so promising that it will give us such pleasure. And we jump in. And Shukadev Goswami says, the result? You break your head. Very painful. You can't stay in the river. You come out. You got a little bit of relief, no doubt. The water did relieve you a little. But you broke your head. This is Prahlad's warning. When we're on the material speculative platform without proper intelligence, guided by Krishna, then the solutions we try to make in this world create a bigger problem than the original problem. So you're trying to solve the problem of suffering due to heat. You jump in the river. As soon as you touch the water, you're relieved. But then, not even seconds later, and you have to come out of the water. And not only are you hot, but you have a broken head. This is Prahlad Maharaj's analogy. The solutions we try to make on the materialistic platform are worse problems than the original problem. That is how material nature works. When a fly is entangled within a spider web, whatever arrangements it tries to make to get out, the more entangled the fly becomes. The more the fly is enthusiastic to move around to get out, the more he's just wound up, helplessly. That is how material nature works. That is how it has been created. It is aimlessly mutable, endlessly entangling. But still, the living entity is searching for shelter. And herein, it is explained that to mitigate the distresses in this forest of material world, the conditioned soul receives cheap blessings from materialistic people. Cheap blessings, like a good job, or like a BA, MA, PhD, or like good promotion, or like a good doctor who gives you good health. Huh? All these things are considered cheap blessings. Because dukalayam ashashvatam, they don't really solve the problem. Sometimes the healthier your body, the more you suffer, because the more your body has the capacity to suffer. Yes. If you have a healthy body, sometimes you engage in so many nefarious activities with such strength and such power that you just incriminate yourself in unbelievable sinful reactions. But when you're sick, sometimes you can't do so bad. So you're safer. So is it really a blessing to have a healthy body? It is if you use your body for the right purpose. But if you use your body for the wrong purpose, the healthier it is, the worse you're going to entangle yourself in the laws of karma. So is it really a blessing? Is wealth actually a blessing? It is if you use it for the right purposes. For the welfare of humanity, actually, and the promotion of the glories of the Lord. Otherwise, we see in Nala Kuvera, Manigriva, and so many other examples, that wealth just makes you proud. It gives more facility for various types of materialistic sense gratification. It's amazing how wealthy people can figure out the most absurd, novel, and profound ways to try to enjoy sinful activities. Yes? Generally, poor people, they just do the common sinful activities. The wealthy people, oh, they can make extravagant arrangements. So yes, wealth, is it really a blessing or a curse? Entangles one, increases a fever of greed, fear of whatever you have, you fear it's going to be taken away. And more, that fever of the infatuation, janasya mohoya mamaham ameti, that I am this body, and that which is in relation to the body is mine. So all material opulences are like this. But yet, the conditioned soul in this forest of material enjoyment is seeking materialistic people for shelter, trying to get blessings from them. And it is described herein, it is like jumping in a river that looks like a deep, cooling experience to relieve one from heat, burning, scorching heat, and we jump in that river and break our head. Just like Srila Prabhupada often explained, trying to be happy in this world is like, it's like a thirsty man dying in the desert getting one drop of water. It creates a titillating effect where there's a little bit of pleasure, but it only agitates the need for more. It does not satisfy. We need a reservoir of water, not a drop of water. So through these karmic efforts to try and happiness in this world by just gross mundane arrangements, we just break our head. And after breaking our head countless times, some somewhat rare people approach what Sukadeva Goswami explains, so-called sadhus and swamis, but who preach against the true Vedic principles. They teach that do this meditational technique, perform these yogic exercises, give some charity according to my direction, and go on with your life. Enjoy. You'll be a better businessman. You'll be a better student. In fact, one of the very popular things in the West is people are going to yogis and gurus from India and reading their books. I have spoke to them. It's actually very popular. And their greatest hope is they'll be given the power to have more enjoyable sexual relationships. Hare Krishna. To improve their sex life. Tantricism, a bogus form of tantricism, has become very, very popular in the West. And they simply promise this, a higher experience when you have illicit sex. And people are mad after such yogis who are teaching like this. And others are teaching these New Age conceptions. Don't restrain yourself. If it feels good, do it. But just do it with a clean heart. Don't feel any guilt. Don't feel any shame. Be pious as much as possible. And do this meditation. Do this breath control. Do these exercises. And you will become God. Very popular. People like this very much. Because in Kali Yuga, people want cheap things. And therefore, there are people who give cheap things to fulfill our desires. That well-known story of Srila Prabhupada, when he was on a train and he was trying to get to his compartment, and one Indian gentleman, he approached Prabhupada. "Swamiji, give me your blessings. Please give me your blessings. Swamiji, give me your blessings. I yearn for your blessings." And Prabhupada just walked. He just offered his pranams and walked. "Swamiji, give me your blessings. I want your blessings." He was so eager for blessings, so greedy for blessings. He followed Prabhupada right into Prabhupada's seat and bowed down to Prabhupada right at his seat and said, "Swamiji, give me your blessings. Give me your blessings." Srila Prabhupada looked at him very sincerely and said, "I bless that your material life is finished." He fell to the ground. He was crying. He was trembling. "Swamiji, that is not the blessing I wanted. That is not the blessing I wanted. Swamiji, please." Because he really felt that this was going to happen. "Please, Swamiji, give me a different blessing." Prabhupada said, "This is the only blessing I have to give." So the man was he was blessed. He was actually blessed. It would be interesting to know what happened to that man. Somehow we have lost track of his destiny. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, so many people were coming to him for material blessings. Bless that my daughter gets a wealthy husband who's very intelligent. Bless that my business will prosper. Bless that my headache will cease to exist. So many blessings. Bless that I will overcome all my competitors. And this is in India. This is not in the West. Almost everyone's looking for material blessings. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj considered it such a pitiable waste of time that he decided to reside in a place where any materialistic person would not want to be. So for some time he was living under a boat on the banks of the Ganges, where people would go specifically to pass stool and urine. And still people were coming to him. One man came, "Babaji Maharaj, give me your blessings. Babaji Maharaj, give me your blessings." And Babaji Maharaj said, "Yes, I bless you that you stay here with me for the rest of your life and do bhajan." The person ran away and never came back. He wouldn't even go there to pass stool. And later, even that, they were coming. So he made his residence in a latrine at the Kuliya Dharamshala. He actually lived in the latrine. Now, who wants to go there to get blessings? But still they were coming, so he kept it locked. Hare Krishna. So bothersome. He's trying to utilize and focus every moment of his life for the highest purpose of focusing on Krishna and do service to Krishna by giving people the highest blessing of Krishna consciousness. Well, how many people want that? Therefore, it is very popular to worship demigods and very popular to worship people who can promise us material benedictions. Srila Prabhupada is explaining here that such people in Kali Yuga can get millions and millions of followers. They can have such immense wealth and power and influence in the world. Because they're giving what the world wants. They want the sense of security for the afterlife. They want a sense that they're close to God. But they want to enjoy materialistic life. Especially. They don't want to be told to restrain their senses. They don't want to be told to surrender to God. And some of them are actually powerful. They have mystic powers. They can produce, Prabhupada says, gold. Now, gold is very valuable. In many places, it is the standard of currency. Each currency note represents so much gold in the government's stockpile of gold. Gold is something that inflation or deflation, it always has value. Yes, if the economy drops, your currency notes may be useless. Your bank may completely go out of, lose everything. That is what happened during the Depression in the United States of America in the early 20th century. The stock market just crashed, and millionaires became beggars in the street overnight. Why? Because the banks had no money to give anyone. Whatever you invested in the bank, whatever you invested in the stock exchange, it was gone forever. It was unretrievable. Hare Krishna. Thousands of people were banging on the doors of the bank, the president, give me my money, I've invested $5 million in your bank, give me something. There's nothing here, it's gone. Nothing here. Even the presidents of the banks were living on the streets. So this plastic currency and paper currency and now electric currency, God knows what currency is going to come next. It's very unstable. Because just supply and demand and the value could change overnight into nothing. Because it's intangible. As Prabhupada said, you can't eat paper currency. You can't dress with paper currency. You can't stay warm with paper currency. It could be no more valuable than the paper it's printed on. There's no difference between a $1,000 bill, a 1,000 rupee note, or a 1 rupee note. It's the same paper. It's a different design on it. But really, what value does that? The value is what it represents. But if there's nothing left to represent, then it's nothing but paper. But gold always has value. It's stable wealth. Yes? Property is stable wealth. Of course, if it's owned by the bank on mortgage, it's not very stable. But ownership of property, gold, and such facilities are real wealth. It's called real estate. Other things are unreal estate. At least that is the illusion. So yes, some yogis, they can actually produce gold. They have the power of prapti siddhi. They have that yogic perfection. And all such people, so many followers. It's not that they get gold from them, but they just see them doing it. And they want to surrender and give everything. Just with the hope that this person is God. Hare Krishna. But when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in this world, he does a lot better things than produce little rings of gold. He does incredible things. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. What is a real guru? Srila Prabhupada explains, that the nature of a real guru is by association with that person, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, we become attached to Krishna, detached from the pursuit of material enjoyment. And we're given the knowledge by which we could do so through devotional service. The example is given that wood is just a very dry, cheap element. Yes? But fire is within wood. Just the other day, Srinathji Prabhu was explaining very scientifically how fire is within wood. He told me the whole science of photosynthesis and all of this. How the light of the sun, the trees are breathing. And they breathe in the daytime, they breathe in, and by the sun's power, they take in the carbon and they breathe out oxygen. Just the opposite of humans. And when they take in that carbon, it creates wood. It creates the trunk of the wood. And after many years, due to ecological conditions, the wood goes underground and it becomes coal. And in deeper places, it becomes even more concentrated, and the wood, which had become coal, becomes oil. And it has this carbon element, which is energized by the sun, and it has the fire element. It has the power to create fire. So fire is inherent within wood. But when wood is just sitting there, that potential is not realized. However, if you kindle the wood with fire, it actually awakens the fire element within wood, and it blazes. Yes? So Srila Prabhupada gives this analogy, that the spiritual master is like fire, and the conditioned soul is like wood. The potential of fire is in the conditioned soul, but it's covered by so much ignorance, it's covered by so much illusion. But in the association of the spiritual master, when the spiritual master speaks transcendental knowledge into the ear of the disciple, then that potential, that true nature, that essence of fire in the wood awakens. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajja Kabu Noi Saravanadi Sudhi Cheti Koriya Yudhoi. The pure love of God is within the heart of every living being. By associating with saintly persons, by hearing and chanting in that association, that love of God is awakened like fire within the wood of our hearts. And that fire gives light, it gives heat. It burns away all the anartas. That is the power of transcendental knowledge. When the divine grace of the great souls enters our heart, our wood-like heart awakens fire, and that fire burns to ashes all misconceptions, all ignorance, all sinful inclinations. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj said, what is the use of all this prayaschitta? You commit sinful activities due to bad desires, then you perform atonement, but like an elephant takes his bath and rolls in the dust in the same way, because we have that sinful inclination, we are forced by that inclination to do it again. Arjuna asks Krishna the same question. How is it, Krishna, that even if one is trying to be good, one is just impelled, one is just forced to engage in sinful activities? Why? Krishna says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna Shimudbhava, Mahashano Mahapapma Vidyenamiha Vairanam. It is Kama. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world, which is later transformed into wrath when it is unfulfilled. And it must be given up. But how? By the arrangement of association with great souls. That spark of grace, that spark of truth, is kindled within our heart. And it actually, if it is fanned, it is, if it is cultivated, then it burns to ashes. The inclination for sinful sense gratification. That is the only real solution. To give up that proclivity for materialistic enjoyment. And that can only come by experiencing a higher taste. That is the power of bhakti. Ragadveshiva muktaishtu vishayan indriyaishtara atmavashar vedheyatma prasadamarikashtati. Krishna says, by following the regulative principles of freedom, one can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. And thus one becomes unaffected by attachments and aversions of this world, the dualities. And there are yogis and gurus who say, no need for rules and regulations. What is this regulative principles? Even many criticize the Hare Krishna movement. Why so strict? Why all these artificial repressions? Because that's what Krishna says is the only way. Tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matvara. It's not only that we're repressing, but we're simultaneously engaging our mind and senses in positive, dynamic spiritual activities called the 9 processes of devotional service. That was something unique about Srila Prabhupada. He was not just teaching, you know, just go on with your life as you like, it doesn't matter. And half hour morning, half hour evening, just do this little meditation. No doubt you'll get a little purified. No doubt you'll get a little more peace of mind. No doubt you'll be a little more effective in your material pursuits. But that's not what Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or the scriptures are telling us. Sarva dharman puritya sha mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masacha. There was one yogi from India. He was actually a very distinguished gentleman. I have met him on several occasions. Actually a very pious man. And he had achieved certain success in developing yogic techniques. And he came to the West and made many followers. At one time, he was one of the most influential Indian spiritualists in the West. Some things happened over the years and he lost his reputation and influence to a large extent. But at that time, he was very, very popular. He had so many tens and thousands of people following him, especially young Americans and even middle-aged Americans. And he met Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, Swamiji, you know, there are many yogis who have come to the West, many sadhus and swamis and spiritual teachers. But we're all teaching, you know, some meditation techniques, some massage therapy techniques, some yogic asanas. We're giving some talks to really make people feel good. But you're telling people, sarvadharman puritya, you're telling people to surrender to Krishna, to abandon all varieties of religion, to give up sin, to follow 4 regulative principles. We wouldn't dare to tell Americans this. And yet you have so many followers. This is amazing. You are so empowered. Amazing. There's a tape of this discussion. You could listen to it. He's saying it, how amazing Prabhupada's success was, that he did what no other Swami or Yogi ever dared to do when they came to the West, actually tell people to surrender to Krishna and give up sinful activities. And yet you're successful. This is incredible. He was really praising Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was not one to be influenced by praise. It's on the tape. Srila Prabhupada very compassionately but sincerely replied to this yogi. He said, if you know that the goal of life is to surrender to Krishna, then why are you cheating all these people by teaching them something else? Hare Krishna. Do you want to know something? I talked to that man years later. He had more respect for Prabhupada after Prabhupada chastised him like that. He really did. He had more respect. And when that man was having difficulties later on, somehow he fell from his position by the allurement of Maya, he was taking shelter of Hare Krishna temples. I remember I'd be giving classes and he'd come and sit and listen very submissively. And afterward, just how wonderful, how good, thank you very much. Because although, you know, he was very popular, very lucrative, he was making mass quantities of money, he was getting so many thousands and thousands and followers of people doing anything for him, he knew that what Prabhupada said was true. We should abandon all varieties of so-called religion and just surrender to Krishna. And when things fell apart, he was finding shelter in the association of Prabhupada's disciples. Hare Krishna. And there was another very famous guru. He was teaching Sikh Dharma. But mostly he was teaching various forms of meditation and pranayama and the raising of kundalini and like that. And he came to Srila Prabhupada to invite him to a conference on the unity of religions and peace on earth. And he had a notebook. He was writing down, you know, some of Prabhupada's ideas. And Prabhupada said, you could write this in your notebook, that your whole conference will be a useless failure. And Prabhupada said, did Guru Nanak not read Bhagavad Gita? And this man said, yes, Guru Nanak was a great scholar of Bhagavad Gita. Well, what does Bhagavad Gita say? Sarva dharman puritya cha mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshaye samimasu cha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to Krishna. Guru Nanak, he surrendered to Krishna. He was a great saint. He surrendered to Krishna. Why don't you teach your people this? The man didn't really know what to say. Prabhupada would say, if I compromise the truth, I will simply be cheating. Prabhupada was very liberal. However fallen one was, he was compassionate. Even if you weren't able to follow it, even if you were falling down again and again, he was a compassionate well-wisher to pick you up, but he would never compromise the goal or the way to the goal. Because then you'll never achieve it. There's a classic example in Srimad Bhagavatam of the nature of a materialistic guru. With all respects and honor, I will repeat what Shukadeva Goswami describes in Bhagavatam. His name, Shukracharya, very powerful. For him, creating gold was not a big thing. He could do a lot more than that. He can create, by just chanting mantras, entire empires and cities. He's very powerful. In fact, Bali Maharaj was his leading disciple, because he was guru for the asuras. And we know the story from the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavat, how the demigods and the demons, they churn the ocean of milk in order to get nectar. The reason they did it is Indra offended his guru. Yes? Indra offended a sadhu. And because he offended a sadhu, he lost everything. Meanwhile, Bali Maharaj and the demons, they were worshipping the Brahmins and doing yajnas and pleasing their guru. So they got tremendous power. So they defeated the demigods. So the demigods went to Lord Vishnu. Save us. Everything's lost. So Lord Vishnu told, you cannot fight against the demons, but through diplomacy and negotiations, we'll figure out a way. Yes, Krishna was expert. Vishnu said, go to the ocean of milk and churn it with the Mandara mountain and the stupi as the churning rod, and the snake Vasuki as the rope. And from that, amrit, nectar, will arise. Now everyone wants nectar. This was a nectar that promised power, long life, health, and great ability to enjoy. How many of you would like that type of nectar? Well, the demigods and the demons were willing to actually make a truce and be allies. They were actually willing to be allies and work together to get the nectar. Amazing. This is politics, is it not? Sometimes enemies, it's not that they don't hate each other, and it's not that they have any less desire to destroy each other, but they'll be on the same side, either to fight against the bigger enemy or to somehow or other get a higher position for themselves. They're all greedy for a higher position themselves, and they're willing to team up with each other. But usually once they get that higher position, then they'll crash like anything. So the demigods and the demons, like two opposing political parties, they join up for the purpose of each one getting what they want. And they churned, and the nectar came. And the demons took it all. Arivo. They were more powerful than the demigods. Not only were they more powerful, but now they had the nectar, which was going to make them unbelievably undefeatable. And the poor demigods, all they could do was cry and pray to Vishnu to save them. And Vishnu appeared as Mohini Murti. And just charmed, oh, what a wonderful incarnation she was. She didn't need any weapons. Her weapon was her beauty. Yes? Usually Vishnu has chakras to cut off the heads in order to deliver the demigods. Or clubs or bows and arrows. Just piercing the hearts. Give property back to demigods. But Mohini Murti, she had a more powerful weapon. Her glance. Her eyebrows were like bows, and her glance was like arrows. And it defeated their minds. And they surrendered everything to her. They surrendered the nectar to her. And she gave it to all the demigods. Now, why didn't the demons attack? As she was just pouring it in the throats of each of the demigods in front of all the demons, and they were just sitting there watching. They could have got up and attacked, but they didn't, because they were so infatuated by the beauty of Mohini Murti they did not want to displease her because they all felt, she loves me, she loves me, she loves me.
Hare Krishna.
She bewildered them in this way, then she manifested Vishnu form and went away. And it was a big problem. Big problem. Anyways, so many things happened, and there was another fight. And the demigods, this time, because they drank the nectar, they slaughtered Bali Maharaj and the demons. Just crushed them. Killed them all. Bali was dead. All the generals of his army were dead, slain by the demigods. Harivo! Now, I'm going to tell you just one little sample of the power of Shukracharya. He was really a powerful mystic guru. He was guru. At least a name. He created some arrangement by his mantras and by his mystic potencies where he dipped the dead bodies of the demons in this potion that he created, and they came alive. Not only came alive, but their bodies were just effulgent and vibrating with incredible potency, power, and light. Hare Krishna. He brought the dead back to life. Tens and thousands. He just brought them all back to life. Now that's a mystic yogi. That's something different than just showing someone a gold ring out of your hand. Not only did he bring him life, he made him so powerful. Bali Maharaj did some yajna and pleased him, and he became so powerful. He was effulgent like the sun. Then they all marched with the blessings of Shukracharya, their guru. They all marched to Indrapur. And when Indra saw, what to speak of the armies, when he saw Bali Maharaj with such strength, with such effulgence, just a few days before, he was dead. It's all the power of Shukracharya, a mystic yogi. Indra turned to his guru, Brihaspati, and said, what am I going to do? Look at Bali Maharaj. He's so powerful. He looks like he could devour the whole universe. And Brihaspati said, there's only one thing you can do. Evacuate. Something like what George Bush said when Hurricane Katrina came to New Orleans. You can't fight this hurricane. You cannot fight. Just yesterday, Hurricane Rita came and crushingly with surge storms and high winds and torrents of rain, massive destruction in all directions. But as she was coming, the United States government ordered the evacuation of 3 million people. Hare Krishna. That's a lot. 3 million people had to evacuate their homes, leave all their property, just take whatever little they had and run. And they had no place to go. People were trying to get out in cars. And so many millions of cars were trying to get out that the highways were so crowded. It was worse than Bombay, believe it or not, during the rush hour. There are there were interviews of people who were sitting in their car, just crawling along, sometimes not even moving. In 20 hours, they only went 2 miles. Hare Krishna. And they're running out of gas. They're running out of petrol because there's no petrol stations and you have to keep your engine running because you're moving little by little. If you stop, then everybody's going to come out and beat you because you're holding up the traffic. So people are running out of petrol. They have no food. They have no place to stay. They're just in the middle of a highway. People are agitated. Some people were playing football on the side of the road. Very difficult. So yes, when this hurricane came, what could George Bush, the President of the United States and the Governor of Texas, Texas, such a powerful state? Most of the oil refineries in America are in Texas. Very, very wealthy. But all they could do when the Hurricane Rita was coming is just tell everyone, evacuate. 3 million people running away from their homes, their property, and everything. So that's kind of the situation. Bali Maharaj was like a hurricane. When Indra saw him, he turned to Brihaspati, what to do? Can you save me? Can you help me? He said, yes, get out, evacuate, and hide. Just hide. Don't show your face anywhere. So not only Indra, but all the demigods had to evacuate because of the hurricane of Hurricane Bali. Hurricane Bali came into town and they all had to evacuate. And he just took over. Took proprietorship of the whole Swarga Loka. Hare Krishna. Now, Aditi, she was very kind-hearted. And with the help of her husband, she performed Payavrata Yajna, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who became her son, Upendra. He appeared in such a small form and as a dwarf. He was known as Vamandev. And after being honored and worshipped by the devatas and by his mother, he went to the banks of the Narmada River where Bali Maharaj was performing another yajna to get more power, to get more grace of God, all under the direction and instruction of who? Shukracharya. Louder, please.
Shukracharya.
Much louder, please.
Shukracharya.
Thank you, thank you. Shukracharya. Very powerful person. If they get his blessings, so much. His blessings already brought them back to life. His blessings gave him the strength to conquer the whole universe. Hare Krishna. And gurus like Shukracharya, they know that, you know, the more... He's a Brahmin. He's a Brahmin. And if you have a disciple that has so much, oh, what facilities you get. So it's good to have a disciple like Bali Maharaj. A lot of facilities he could arrange for you. So here is Bali Maharaj, the king of the universe. And little Vamanadeva approaches him. And Bali Maharaj sees he's a Brahmin. He's a little tiny Brahmin. So he worshipped Vamanadeva very nicely. He washed his feet. He gave him a sitting place. And he said, please now, you have come with a begging bowl in your hand. I'm prepared to give you whatever charity you like. And little Vaman praised him so much, really knew how to melt the heart. He was glorifying Hiranyaksha as being such a noble, hard fighter, such a heroic person in the battlefield. And he was so great that he laid his life down before the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Varaha Dev. So great was Hiranyaksha. And Hiranyakashipu, he conquered the whole universe. Even Indra would run away when he would move his eyebrows. He was so powerful. He was so undefeatable in battle. Only the Supreme Lord as Narsingadev could liberate him. So great was your great-grandfather. And Prahlad, oh, he was praising him like anything. All of your ancestors, they were all generous. They were always charitable. They were all great souls. So following in their footsteps, please give me whatever I like. Yes, ask whatever you like. Give me the amount of land that my three steps will cover. Bali Maharaj said, I can give you a planet. I can give you an island in the ocean of material existence. I can give you palaces. I can give you fame. I can give you so much. Why are you asking three steps? Brahmana, Dave said. If one is not satisfied with a little, one could never be satisfied with however much one gets. I am a satisfied person from within. All I require is 3 steps. Please give. And Bali Maharaj was actually chastised by this little Brahmin dwarf for being materialistic. But he was happy. He smiled. He said, "Yes, I give you this promise. Take whatever you desire." And then he was about to solemnize his promise with water from his lota by washing the Lord's feet. But just before he did that, Shukracharya was really aggrieved. He was very, very disturbed by the turn of events. He went through all the yogic labor of bringing Bali back to life, making him powerful, giving him the strength to conquer the whole heavenly kingdom, and now Bali's about to lose everything? Shukracharya said, "Oh, son of Virochan, do not speak like a fool. You are a rascal. You do not know that this little Brahmin dwarf is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. He is Hari. He will take away everything. He will expand himself to such a gigantic size that 2 of his steps will cover the entire universal creation, and you won't even have any place to put his 3rd step. So he will arrest you. He will cheat you. He will make you a liar. What is the use? Now you think you have to keep your promise, but in the end you won't be able to keep your promise. He's going to make you a liar. He's going to cheat you."
Hare Krishna.
The Lord's name is Hari. Hari means one who takes away all sufferings, one who takes away all distress, one who takes away all illusion. That is what Hari means. But Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that superficially, at the interim period, as he's taking away all your distress, all your sorrows, all your miseries forever, that's what Hari really means. Superficially, in the interim period, to facilitate that, sometimes he takes away your wealth, your health, your prestige, even your own mind. Hare Krishna. Yasyanam anagnami harishyeta danam shanai. 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 88th chapter, describes in this way. Krishna says, "When I show my kindness to my devotee, I'll give them what they want. But when I show great compassion, I take everything away. So that devotee has nowhere and nothing else to take shelter of except me." And in this way, with great feeling, in the spirit of a Kinchana Gocharam, they chant my holy name. Shukracharya was a great scholar. He knows who is Vishnu. He knows the Vedas scrutinizingly. There's no scholar like Shukracharya in the world today. He was so deeply learned. He knows who is Vishnu, and he knows what Vishnu does. He is Hari. So he was ordering Bali, "Do not give this Brahmin anything. He is Vishnu. He has come to cheat you. What he will do is he will take all your property, he will take your body, he will take your mind, he will leave you as a poverty-stricken beggar, and everything that we have worked so hard to attain, he will give it all to your enemy, Indra. You may think you've made your promise, and therefore that promise has to be followed. But according to the Shastra, if you make a promise and that promise is contrary to your well-being, if it puts you in a very dangerous condition, then you are sanctioned to break that promise. In fact, you must break that promise. Your body is like a tree. You want fruits on the tree, but a tree cannot give fruits if the tree is in a diseased condition. If you uproot the tree, then where are the fruits going to come from? So similarly, all your religious activities, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, after all, these are the goals of life. How can you enjoy any of it if you don't even have a body anymore? Your body is a tree. The Lord is going to take away your body. He's going to take away all your wealth. He's going to take away everything. So you'll have no power to perform any proper spiritual activities. Nothing. Therefore, you must give Him nothing. Besides that, unless the word Om is recited before making a promise, it is not truthful. It is untruthful. Hare Krishna. He was really going to extremes of scrutinizing loopholes within the Vedas. He said, "You are a rascal, Bali. I order you, do not give him anything." Hare Krishna. Bali Maharaj was chastised severely by Shukracharya. Not an ordinary little guru. Shukracharya brought him back from the dead, gave him incredible bodily strength, incredible bodily health, effulgence like a sun. He gave him all these things. And now he's chastising him and giving him an order. Now how do you go against a guru like that? He became the king of the universe by the blessing of his guru. So Bali Maharaj silently contemplated the situation he was in. And he told Shukracharya that I am the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, I must follow in his footsteps. He is the Supreme Lord. He has come to me in the form of a Brahmin. And I have promised him 3 steps of land. I have promised to fulfill his desires. I cannot retract my promise. The earth has said that I can tolerate the burden of any weight, but I cannot tolerate the burden of a liar, a person who is untruthful. It is the greatest sin to break your promise. I am not afraid of going to hell. I am not afraid of losing all my opulences. I am not afraid of death. But I have great fear of offending a Brahmin. What is the harm of giving up everything? The great king Shibi and the great Saint Dadichi, they have earned everlasting fame because they gave up their very lives for a higher cause. The opulences, the prestige, and the power and acquisitions of this world are all finished at the time of death. However, one's reputation could live on for millions and millions of years. Better to lose everything than to lose one's reputation as an honest, charitable person. He was very, very strong. So therefore, at the cost of everything I have, at the cost of all risks, at the very cost of my life, I will surrender to Lord Vishnu. This is the example my grandfather has shown me. When Shukracharya heard this, he was outraged. You dare to disobey my order? You are a fool. You are a rascal. I curse. I curse you. You will lose all your opulences. You will lose everything. And you will be utterly humiliated.
Hare Krishna.
So Bali Maharaj, he smiled. He just got cursed by his guru. He's not just one of these gurus, you know, from Madhya Pradesh who just gives some fascinating lectures and show a few little mystic powers. This is Shukracharya. Powerful person. And Bali was just cursed by him. Infuriated him. And then he turned to Vamanadev, and his wife, Vindhyavali, she came forward with a golden pot, and they washed Vamanadev's lotus feet. Just to solemnize the promise. And then Bali said, "Now, you take whatever you desire." And everything Sukracharya said was true. Exactly. He could see it. He prophesized exactly what this little Brahmin would do. He expanded his body. With the first two steps, he covered the whole lower, middle, and upper planet. Second step, he actually went way through outer space to the upper planets. He pierced the covering of the universe. And just to make it very, very clear that he did pierce it, the Ganga came out. He covered the whole universe. Ganga washed his lotus feet. Pure, sanctified Charanamrita of the Lord. And then Vamanadev, who became Trivikram, he reduced himself again to a little dwarf and had Garuda tie up Bali with ropes and arrest him. And here he was, he couldn't move, he was just bound up by ropes. He was now utterly poverty stricken. He had nothing. Nothing. Just like Duryodhana said to the Pandavas, "I will not give you enough land you could push the tip of a needle through." Bali Maharaj didn't even have that. And just minutes before, he was the king of the universe. That's, for most people, that will be a culture shock. Nothing. Not only did he lose everything, but he was a prisoner. He was bound up. He couldn't even move. And Vamanadev said, "What should I do? Will you promise me three steps?" Meanwhile, Prahlad Maharaj appeared. His wife Vindhyavali appeared. And Prahlad Maharaj was so happy. Bali Maharaj said, "I've given you everything. The only thing I have left is my body and my life. I now surrender that. Put your third step on the top of my head." And he did. Atmanivedanam. He surrendered everything. Unconditionally. Without expecting anything in return. And Prahlad Maharaj came forward and praised his good fortune. Oh, he was so happy. And then he praised the Supreme Bali, little, or Prahlad Maharaj bowed down in prostration before Vamanadev and started saying, how merciful you are. How merciful you are to my grandson, the son of Virochana. that you have taken everything away because all this opulence and wealth and prestige just makes one infatuated. One cannot properly respect others. One becomes attached. One becomes egoistic. You've taken all that away. And you've taken his life. How merciful. How kind. He congratulated the good fortune of Bali as he's with ropes. Bali wanted to bow down to Prahlad, but he couldn't even bow down because he was tied up. All he could do is bend his head and weep tears of affection for his grandfather. And then Vindhyavali, she was praying. This is his wife. Now for you ladies, she's a great soul. How would you like your husband to lose everything within a minute, within a moment? She was appealing to the Lord to release her husband. She was in distress to see him bound by ropes, unable to move. But she praised the Lord. And she praised the good fortune of her... She actually chastised her husband. Vindhyavali said, "My husband thinks that he gave you something. He didn't give you anything. Because you're the supreme proprietor of everything. What could he give him? This is all false ego to think that he gave you something. You are the proprietor of all the 14 worlds. You are the proprietor of all the planets. They're not his, they're yours. How could he give them to you? You are the creator of his body. You are the proprietor of the body. You are the proprietor of his soul. You are proprietor of his mind. He has just surrendered his body, his mind, his soul to you, but they're already your property. He hasn't given anything to you. He's under the illusion that he's giving, but he's not giving. It is already yours." Arivo. One time a devotee came to Prabhupada and said, "Srila Prabhupada, I want to surrender everything." And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Krishna is the proprietor of everything. You have nothing to surrender." The devotee said, "I want to renounce everything, Prabhupada." He said, "You own nothing. What do you have to renounce? The only thing you have to renounce is the illusion that you have something to renounce." Because everything is the property of Krishna. You take water and offer it to the Ganges, right from the Ganges. Billions and billions of gallons of water on the Ganges just within your eyesight. What to speak of so many thousands of miles of water. And you just take one little handful and offer it to Ganga. Is that something to be proud about? "Ganga, I have surrendered this water to you. I have renounced this water." What have you renounced? It already belongs to Ganga. But if you offer with love, Ganga will accept. The Lord accepts the purpose in which everything is offered. Bali Maharaj had nothing to surrender except his heart. And he surrendered his heart. Atmanivedana. His body, his mind, his words, and his life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that this is what sannyas means. There are four dandas within the sannyas staff, which represents the body, the mind, the words, and life. The spirit itself, the jiva. That is what sannyas is about. Sarvadharma paritya. The crest jewel of all such renunciations are the gopis of Vrindavan. They surrendered everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Bali Maharaj is eternally famous as an inspiration for all devotees because he surrendered everything to Krishna. Atmanivedanam. He perfected the ninth process of devotional service. Even at the threat of the infuriated curse of such a guru and swami as Shukracharya. Hare Krishna. So Vamanadeva then untied Bali and told him, "I will give you the planet of Sutala Loka, And I will personally go there and be your doorkeeper so that you will always see me. I cannot give up your association because of your love. And Prahlad Maharaj said, I'm going to Sutala Loka too. I'm so proud and so happy with my grandson. I want to live with him. So they all left. Bali left. Vindhyavali, his wife, left. Prahlad Maharaj left for Sutala Loka. And then Vamanadeva, this is a very interesting part of the story. He saw that Shukracharya was watching the whole thing. He was sitting there in an assembly of yogic Brahmins, just watching everything. And Vamanadeva asked Shukracharya, you are his guru? Please tell, what are the attributes and what are the faults of Bali Maharaj in the execution of his activities? Hare Krishna. Shukracharya's heart changed through this whole experience. He said there is absolutely no fault in Bali Maharaj. Because success is simply pleasing you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the only success of any yajna. That is the only success of any sacrifice. That is the only success of any occupational duty that a person could perform, is that they please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Bali Maharaj has pleased you. Therefore, there is no fault. In performing yajnas or religious activities, there may be many faults in the pronunciation of mantras. There may be many faults and defects in the execution of the ritual. There may be many defects in getting the right qualified people to assist. There may be so many defects. But my Lord, all those defects are counteracted and everything becomes perfect and faultless when one sincerely chants your holy name.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna Varnam Tvisa Krishnam Sango Pangasha Parashanam Yagyai Sankirtana Praya Yajanti Hi Shumedasha.
Those in this age of Kali who have good intelligence, they will worship the Supreme Lord who appears in a beautiful golden form by chanting the holy names, Nam Sankirtan. Bhagavatam concludes that yes, in this age of Kali, simply by chanting the holy names and offering obeisances to the Lord, one becomes freed of all sinful reactions and attains perfection. Harinam, harinam, harinam eva kevala. In this age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way except the chanting of the name of Hari. Kali Yuga, ocean of faults. One benediction, chanting the name of Hari. Iti sodak shakam nam nam kali kalmasha nashanam. Kali Santarana Upanishad describes, there is no better medicine in this age of Kali than chanting the 32-syllable, 16-word Maha Mantra.
So Shukracharya was a very, very powerful guru. He wasn't one of these gold-producing gurus.
He had powers billions of times greater than that. And yet he was rejected by Bali Maharaj. Why? Because he was not teaching unconditional surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is true guru. One who teaches surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the path that the Lord gives us to surrender.
Yad karosi yad ashnasi yad johosi dadasi yad.
to being free of ego. And whatever we do, whatever we eat, whatever we speak should be done as an offering to the Lord. Man manabhavamadba. Always think of me. He doesn't say always think of a light bulb. He doesn't say always think of the crack between the floor and the door. He doesn't say always think of your breath. He says always think of me. Focus your consciousness on me. And this way you will come to me. But in the age of Kali, people don't want. Srila Prabhupada said, if you want plastic jewelry, millions of people will come to buy it. But if you go to Tiffany's, Prabhupada said, the most exclusive jewelry shop in the world, he said, only a few people come in. Because if you want a diamond, you have to pay the price. If you want plastic and glass jewelry, you pay that price. Everyone has the price. Everyone has the price. Sincere devotion. But how many people are willing to offer it? Prabhupada gave example of the person who was very attached to his grains. And a wind came and blew the grains and all went into the air. So then he just said, Vishnu, Vishnu, I offer this all to you. That's not devotion. At the time of death, Krishna's going to take everything away. But that you don't make any advancement when he takes it away at death. But if you give it away by your own sweet will. And giving it away doesn't mean just not having it. It means what Rupa Goswami calls yukta vairagya. It means using it in Krishna's service. You could be a king. Bali Maharaj at Sutala Loka was given magnificent wealth. Prahlad Maharaj, after he surrendered everything to Nrsingadev, he became the king of the universe. Prahlad, king of the Dayatas. So many great souls. Yudhisthira, yasya hamanagrinami. Krishna tells Yudhisthira, I take everything away. He already took everything away. Now he's giving everything back and more. But Yudhisthira was a Kinshana Gotram. He used it all for Krishna's service. That is perfection of life. That is real wealth. Real wealth is this service attitude. Because that is everlasting. That is the constitutional nature of the soul. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. And as Prabhupada said, the genuine spiritual masters, the genuine sadhus, that fire of devotion to Krishna is blazing in their hearts. And by coming in contact with them, the dry, dead wood of our heart is activated, and that fire within us is kindled by the association of the fire that they are emanating through their blessings and their divine grace. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, can you show me miracle? They wanted to see some gold produced. Prabhupada said, my miracle is I have made hippies into happies. People who were, and today in India, people are basically categorically like hippies. So much materialism. Huh? But at least hippies were looking for something higher. But most people in India now, what are they looking for? Srila Prabhupada said, I have taken people who are addicted to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling and meat eating, people who are atheistic, people who had no sense of God, and now they are perfect Vaishnavas, surrendering everything day and night, body, mind, words and life to the service of Krishna. He said, this is my miracle.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. It is very late, so we will end here. Hare Krishna.